It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. Mark Lefonier, your host for an hour of drama. Later on, it stars over Hollywood from 1954, but first a broadcast of favorite story, titled The Strange Mr. Bartleby, released for syndication in 1947.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. We have learned to understand many complex things in this modern day, but the complexity of the human mind is something which still baffles us. Oh, sometimes we may get a brief glimpse of its inner workings, as in a glass darkly, but for the most part, it remains our greatest mystery. Especially difficult to understand is the mind which has lost its bearings with its fellow men. In biblical times, they thought such people were beset by devils, to be driven out by incantations. But today we know that men often go mad because they are charged with such grief or emotion that their minds give way beneath the strain. We have a story of such a man and such a mind, a rather obscure story, discovered for us by the famous star and director of Universal International Studios, Mr. Robert Montgomery. As his favorite story, he chose The Strange Mr. Bartleby by Herman Melville, author of Moby Dick. Here's Bob Montgomery's favorite story, Act One.
How do you do? I am an attorney at law. My chambers are in a rather bleak building on Wall Street in the city of New York. I never address a jury or battle the cause of justice in the court of law. My office handles title deeds and wills and such. I'm afraid mine is a rather gloomy, musty office looking out on the brick wall of an adjacent building. Now, you'll say that nothing much can happen in such an office in the way of drama or excitement, and I'm bound to agree with you. But then, I remember a certain man, the man named Bartleby. This all happened in the days before typewriters, when all legal documents were copied by hand. I had one regular copyist, the chap I called Nippers, but the work piled up, so I advertised for another. I'll never forget the morning that motionless man stood in my office. I can see that figure now, pallidly neat, pitiably respectable, incurably forlorn. Your name?
Bartleby.
Yes, but is that your first or your last name?
That is what you may call me, sir.
That's a little strange. Which is it, your first or your last? Won't you tell me?
I would prefer not.
Well, then, what are your qualifications?
I can do the work required.
No, what was your last position?
I have worked for the United States government in Washington for the last 20 years.
In what capacity? What sort of work did you do for the government? Well, I must admit you strike me as a rather secretive chap, Bartleby. But I'm quite urgently in need of a copyist, and I'm willing to give you a try. Will you report in the morning?
If you don't mind, sir, may I start right now?
Well, yes, of course. But don't you want to take the day to straighten out your personal affairs?
I would prefer not.
I must say that at first Bartleby did an extraordinary quantity of writing. He wrote for the hour, silently, mechanically, in a clear, precise hand. On his third day with me, a rather strange thing happened.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yes, Nippers?
I would like to proofread these titles with someone, sir, and the new clerk, Mr. Bartleby, doesn't even answer me.
Oh, really? No? Well, we'll attend to that. Bartleby! Bartleby, come in here. There's some material to proofread, and we need your assistance.
I would prefer not.
Prefer not. What do you mean? Are you moonstruck? I want you to help Nippers compare these sheets. Now, here, take these.
I would prefer not.
What? Why do you refuse?
I would prefer not.
Nippers, start to dictate. Bartleby will check the copy.
Very well, sir. Whereas the Court of Chancery of the State of New York declares...
Bartleby, you are not following the copy.
I would prefer not.
Every copyist is bound to help examine proofs. Don't you know that? Well, answer me. Really, Bartleby, I have no desire to stand here and shout at you like an angry schoolmaster. You have decided, then, not to comply with my request, a request made according to common usage and common sense. Nippers, what do you think of this? Am I not right?
With submission, sir, I think that you are.
You hear what he says. Now do your job.
I would prefer not.
Now, mind you, this man was useful to me as a copyist. He just would not communicate with other human beings. And then I began to observe the strangest things. Bartleby never took a lunch hour. Bartleby was in the office when I left and was the first one there in the morning when I arrived. But didn't the man eat? I began to regard his ways more narrowly. I noticed that every day one of the office boys would bring him a handful of ginger nuts, small little cakes. But could a man live on ginger nuts? Bartleby seemed to. One Sunday morning, I decided to pick up some briefs in my office. Wall Street was deserted as a tomb. It's remarkable how quiet it can get on Sunday. I walked up the dark stairway, put the key in the lock of my office door. When suddenly someone from inside resisted.
Don't come in, please.
Bartleby, is that you?
Yes. I'm very sorry. I am not fully dressed. I would prefer not admitting you at present.
Bartleby, have you been living in my office?
Living?
Answer me, man. Will you answer me?
I would prefer not.
I left the building. I did not return that day. A great melancholy seized me. I knew then that Bartleby had been making that bleak and barren office his home. Think of it. What loneliness. His poverty must be great, but his solitude, how horrible. This building, which on weekdays hums with industry and life, at nightfall echoes with sheer vacancy, and on Sunday is so quiet it should drive an ordinary man mad. Bartleby. It was like a bit of wreckage afloat in the middle of an ocean. On Monday morning, I determined to have a talk with the man as gently as I could. Bartleby? Bartleby, come here. Huh. I am not going to ask you to do anything you would prefer not to do. I simply wish to speak to you.
Yes?
Won't you sit down?
I would prefer not.
As you wish. Bartleby? Will you tell me something about yourself?
I would prefer not.
But what reasonable objection can you have to speak to me? I feel friendly towards you. What is your answer?
I would prefer not to give an answer at present.
All right, Bartleby. I won't plague you with questions. Never mind about revealing any of your history. But let me entreat you as a friend to comply as far as possible with the usages of this office. Say now you will help examine papers tomorrow or the next day. Say so, Bartleby.
At present, I would prefer not to examine papers.
Prefer not, eh? I'd prefer him if I were you, sir.
Mr. Nippers, I'd prefer that you withdraw for the present.
You see, sir, you have got that word, too.
What word?
I would prefer to be left alone.
That's the word. That's it.
Oh, prefer? Oh, yes, an odd word. I never use it myself. Right now, Nippers, I'd prefer not to... Oh, good Lord.
I'll leave, sir, if you prefer.
He was beginning to do something in my office. There was a pall over it, like living death.
One day when Bartleby was at the far end of the office away from his desk, I decided I had to investigate. I had to find out something about this man. I went to his desk and started to go through the drawers. They were empty, completely empty, except for a few crumbs of ginger nuts. When I turned around, there was Bartleby standing staring at me with that unexpressive coldness in his eyes.
Bartleby, I'm sorry. I was looking for... Well, for the love of heaven, this is my desk. I pay for it. This is my office. I pay the rent. There's no reason why I have to apologize to you. Something terrible has happened inside me since the day you walked in here. I have a feeling the place is full of death. You'd better leave.
I would prefer not.
Mind you, I had pity for this man, compassion. I wanted to help him. But talking to him was like talking to the brick wall outside his window. Then the strangest thing of all happened. The titles and deeds I gave him to copy were not turned in. I stopped my work and turned to listen for a sound from his desk. The familiar, even scribbling sound had stopped. Bartleby? Bartleby, where's your work? Bartleby, I'm talking to you. Bartleby! Bartleby, I've been calling you. Well, have the decency to turn around. Just don't stand there facing that dreary brick wall. Why aren't you working?
I have decided that I will do no more writing.
Do no more writing? What's your reason?
My eye. Look at my eye.
They do seem a bit bloodshot. Well, the light is not too good in here. We'll remedy that. You may take a few days off and rest your eyes. This is a hazard of the profession. Why don't you go to the country for the weekend, eh?
I have given up copying.
Even when your eyes get better?
Yes.
In that case, Bartleby, I'm afraid we'll have to part. I'll have no use for you. I'll give you your final check and you may go.
I would prefer not.
I'll be very generous with you, Bartleby. I will give you wages for 2 additional weeks, but you must quit this office. You must leave.
I would prefer not to leave you.
What earthly right do you have to stay here? Do you pay any rent? Do you pay any taxes? I order you in the name of decency, in the name of the law, to leave this office.
I would prefer not.
Bartleby stayed in my office for weeks. Just stayed there, not working. His presence in the office was hurting my business. He frightened people with his cold, impersonal manner. I just couldn't call the police. It was not in me to commit this man to prison. And on what grounds? I finally hit on a solution. Since he would not quit me, I would quit him. I decided to change my offices.
Bartleby, I find these chambers too far from the city hall. In a word, I propose to remove my offices next week and shall no longer require your presence. I tell you this now in order that you may seek another place.
He made no reply. He just looked at me. On the appointed day, the movers took out all the furniture. Bartleby alone remained in that completely empty office, a mute fixture standing by the window.
Bartleby, I bid you goodbye. I'm going now. I've tried to understand you. I've tried to help you. I've failed. May God, in some way that he alone knows, take care of you.
I thought I had left Bartleby behind me. For 3 whole days, I did not see him. I was settling nicely in my new office when suddenly the door flew open. It was the landlord of the building I had just vacated.
Oh, There you are.
Good day to you, Mr. Cavendish.
It is usually the practice, my dear sir, when you move out of an office to take all of your employees with you.
Oh.
When the new tenant moved in, that man was just standing there. When we asked him in all decency to move, he said he would...
Prefer not.
Yes. We finally got him out of the office by sheer force, but now he haunts the building generally. He sits upon the stairs by day, and he sleeps in the entry at night. Clients are leaving the offices. I'll be ruined.
I'll go to him immediately.
There he is. You see? Like a leech hanging to the stairway.
I'll see what I can do. Hello, Bartleby. What are you doing here?
Sitting on the staircase.
Bartleby, are you aware that you were the cause of great tribulation to me by staying here after being dismissed from the office? Now come, I will help you find another position.
No. I would prefer not to make any change.
Would you like a clerkship in a store, perhaps?
There's too much confinement about that.
Too much confinement? Well, you keep yourself confined all the time.
I would prefer not to take a clerkship.
Well, then, would you like to travel through the country as a bill collector? That would improve your health.
I like to be stationary.
Well, then, be stationary in prison. I wash my hands of you. I left the building quickly, avoiding the landlord and the incensed tenants. The whole incident unnerved me, so I decided to take a short vacation. When I returned to my office, there was a package there waiting for me. I ripped it open. It was the old suit jacket that Bartleby had worn, that thin, dull coat that had hung around his skinny shoulders. With the jacket, there was a note from the landlord. Your friend, Mr. Bartleby, is now at Tombs Prison. We were forced to send for the police. However, he left this jacket behind on the stairs. We return it to you as his employer. Oh, Bartleby, Bartleby. What made you into the kind of man you are? As I started to put his jacket aside, I noticed a bit of paper in the inside pocket. I removed it. It was an envelope, a very old envelope. The postmark was blurred, but I could see that it was Washington, D.C. And the date was some 18 years ago. It was addressed to Miss Helen Underwood at a street number in Chicago. That address was scratched out, and a half dozen others were scrawled over it in its place. The envelope was covered with rubber-stamped messages. Not here, gone, no forwarding address given. Until finally at the bottom of the tattered envelope was another rubber-stamped message. Refer to Post Office Department 49, attention, Mr. Bartleby. I looked inside. The envelope was empty. I had to help Bartleby. He was a riddle inside my head that had to be solved. This envelope, this poor crumpled envelope, was the only clue I had to his past. So I decided to go to Washington. Perhaps he had a friend, a relative. Perhaps his past would be the key to this man's mind. I beg your pardon. Can you tell me where I can find Department 49, please?
Basement.
Thank you.
It's just a matter. What do you want to go down there for?
It's a personal matter.
Well, you can go down if you like, only I wouldn't advise it.
Why? What section of the post office is 49?
Go on, have a look. You'll find out soon enough.
I climbed down the musty stairs of the old post office building. The air had a clammy feeling. All my spirits seemed to descend with me. I came into a large, low-ceilinged room. All around, stacked high, were letters. At the far end of the room was a furnace, its mouth laughing at the room.
Yes, young man?
I whirled around. An old man stood at my side.
What can I do for you?
I come on an errand of mercy. Do you know a man named Bartleby?
Bartleby?
Has he worked here?
He worked here.
What is this place?
Post office of the United States government.
No, no, this room, this department.
Can't you tell? Look around you. This is the end of the line. The dead letter office.
Oh, I see.
You are a friend of Bartleby's?
I was his employer. I come only to see what happened to Bartleby's mind that makes him so sad, so odd, so lacking in hope.
For 20 years, Bartleby's job was opening letters here in this room to see if their contents could identify the sender or the addressee.
Oh.
Dead letters, young man. Dead letters. Doesn't that sound like dead men? Imagine this, if you can. The accumulated sorrow of a nation passes through this cellar. Can any business in all the world give a man more hopelessness than handling these letters and sorting them for the flames? We burn them by the cartload.
Oh, Bartleby. Bartleby.
I used to watch his eyes as he opened the letters. Sometimes out of the folded paper he would take a ring. The finger it was meant for, perhaps molded in the grave. Another letter, a banknote, sent in swiftest charity, but the man whom it would relieve neither eats nor hungers anymore. Another still, a lost son to a lost mother, but lost forever to each other, here in our cellar, here in our flames. Look, open a few of these, young men. Oh, an errand of life. These letters speed to death.
One question, please. Do you know of a person named Helen Underwood? Perhaps a friend of Bartleby's.
Helen Underwood? Yes. It was the one letter that Bartleby himself wrote in all those years. And a long, long time afterwards, that letter came back here to him. Unopened, unanswered, like all the others.
Sleeping. The silent man, that's what we call him.
Thank you.
If you're a friend of his, you might be able to get him to go off this hunger strike. He hasn't eaten a bite all week. You know, the doc says he's dying.
So, would you leave me alone with him for just a few minutes, please?
Help yourself. He'll probably tell you he prefers not to do something.
Bartleby. Bartleby.
I know you.
It was not I who had you brought here to prison, Bartleby. I've come to help you. Now, first of all, you must eat.
I would prefer not to eat.
Bartleby, I know what's the matter with you. Now, listen to me. You're sick, but it's not hopeless, Bartleby. No, don't turn away. Please, don't go back to sleep, Bartleby. There are new sciences, new doctors who can help you. Bartleby, do you hear me? Listen to me. You must live. You must live.
I would prefer not.
Bartleby.
Can't get anything out of him, huh? Still asleep, ain't he?
Yes, sleep. Don't try to wake him.
You would prefer not.
You've heard The Strange Mr. Bartlemy, a most remarkable short story by Herman Melville, dramatized and directed by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Lee. William Conrad was the attorney, and Hans Conried was the tragic and terrified Bartleby. Claude Sweeten composed and conducted the score. And Mr. Robert Montgomery selected The Strange Mr. Bartleby as his own favorite story. We count it as quite a discovery, the kind of unusual drama that we're proud to bring you in this half hour. Next week, I shall have the pleasure of bringing to the favorite story microphones James Hilton's Lost Horizon. Miss Mary Pickford has selected it as her favorite. And I've promised Mary that once again I would make that perilous and dramatic journey to Shangri-La. So when we spend a half hour next week at the Lamasery in the Valley of the Blue Moon, we hope you'll be listening.
Favorite Story on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1947. That story was one of Moby Dick author Herman Melville's more obscure tales and was originally titled Bartleby the Scrivener, A Story of Wall Street, first published anonymously in Putnam's Magazine in 1853. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now actress Debbie Reynolds stars in Stars Over Hollywood in a play called Grand Gesture, a CBS episode from February 20th, 1954.
Carnation Evaporated Milk presents A Star, Debbie Reynolds, on Stars Over Hollywood.
It isn't that I don't like men. I'm no different from other girls. I mean, I'd like to have a man who'd take me out and send me flowers and want the things I want, but I guess I'm just not the type.
From Hollywood, California, where the world's favorite stars live and work, the world's favorite evaporated milk brings you transcribed Stars Over Hollywood. Each week, Carnation presents another famous name from motion pictures, television, and radio. Such distinguished performers as Ronald Reagan, Jan Sterling, Barry Sullivan. Today's star, Debbie Reynolds, is appearing by arrangement with MGM, who celebrate their 30th anniversary at your favorite theater with the Long, Long Trailer, starring Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Today's story, Grand Gesture, is brought to you from Hollywood by Carnation, the milk from contented cows. Pat Rogers is the kind of girl who goes unnoticed in crowds. Standing by as the train gets in Grand Central Station, no one even glances her way. A slim young girl, neither pretty nor plain, her nurse's uniform hidden by a shabby black coat. If you did happen to glance her way, you'd know her voice was soft and gentle. And if you saw her smile, you'd see her face become wistfully beautiful, as it does now, when an elderly woman comes up the ramp from the train.
Mama! Mama, over here!
Oh, Pat! Oh, my goodness! All these people, pushing, hurrying so.
Mama, you look so tired.
Well, I... The train trip.
Did you get a berth like I told you to?
Well, I...
Oh, Mama. You sat up in the coach all night.
Now, Pat, the extra money...
The money wasn't important. I told you that. Oh, well. I'll get you home and you can lie down. Give me your bag. I'll carry it.
Oh, it's not heavy.
Hand me the bag. Now, home, bed, a nice hot cup of tea, and you'll be fine.
Pat... The doctor at the Mayo Clinic, did he write you a letter like he said he would?
Yes, Mama. We'll talk about it when we get home.
You do understand my wanting to be back here with you when I have the operation?
Of course, Mama. We'll go see Dr. Finchley in the morning.
Oh, that'll be fine. I like Dr. Finchley so much. And it'll be nice being in the same hospital where you work. Oh, Pat, I've been such a burden on you.
Don't say that, Mama. Don't ever say it again.
Like I was saying, Doc, I can't keep a waitress working here for more than a week or two. They want more money, they want less work, they want a soft deal, they want a husband with a nice little business like this one.
Well, what you should do, Nick, is marry one and have a waitress who works without pay.
Here's your change. No, sir. Not me. I'm allergic to women. I got burnt once. That was enough.
Must have been bad.
The works. $250 worth. The day after I give her a diamond engagement ring, she runs off with another guy.
Oh, well, I guess I can't blame you. Well, back to the grind.
Hey, Doc, you tell that other intern, whatever his name is, tell him I want the $5 he owes me.
Well, tomorrow's payday, Nick. See you later.
So long.
Oh, hiya, Pat.
Hello, Doctor.
Nice weather, huh? Boy, you sure got soaked.
It doesn't matter. A cup of coffee, please.
Nothing else?
That's all.
Yep, sure is a storm. Well, here you are. Best coffee in town.
Thank you.
Hey, you better watch it. You spill your coffee all over that white uniform, it'll be a mess. See, you're shaking something awful. Oh, now, nothing's that bad, lady.
I'm sorry. I don't usually do this.
What's the matter? You just lose a favorite patient or something over at the hospital?
No. It's my mother. She's over there seeing Dr. Finchley.
Well, then there's nothing to worry about. Finchley's one of the best in town. At least that's what all the interns and nurses say.
Even the very best sometimes can't do anything. She just came back from Mayo Clinic. A doctor out there wrote me and said... He said there was very little chance for her.
Oh. Oh, I see. Gee, that's too bad.
I just couldn't stand it over there waiting. So I came here for a cup of coffee.
You better drink it before it gets cold.
Yes, I guess I had... I'm sorry about crying in front of you.
Oh, that's all right. You really got something to cry about. If it was my mother, I guess I'd cry, too.
Yes, I guess you would.
I haven't seen you in here before.
Well, I've come in a few times, but...
Of course, so many nurses come in, I can't remember all of them.
No, of course not. And it just being a few times, naturally, you wouldn't remember.
Well, if they were all like you, I'd go out of business.
Well, you see, my mother... I have to be with her as much as possible, so I very seldom go anyplace.
You mean no dates, no boyfriends, no nothing?
No. No boyfriends or dates.
Well, what do you know? A dame with no boyfriend. Hey, you must be like me. You don't trust guys, I don't trust dames.
Oh, it isn't that. I'm no different from other girls. I mean, I'd like to have a man who'd take me out and send me flowers and want the same things I want, but...
Aren't you going to drink your coffee?
I'd better get back to the hospital. Your name is Nick, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for what? You paid for your coffee.
Just thank you for being nice when I needed someone to be nice.
For being nice? Me? Nice? Ah, same old line. Dames.
Now, Mama, you sit down here and order yourself a good luncheon. I have to get back to the hospital.
All right, dear. Now, don't worry about me.
Promise you'll take a cab home?
I promise.
Would you see that she takes a cab, Nick?
Me? Oh, sure, I'll call on myself.
Oh, thank you very much. I have to hurry now. And you lie down when you get home, Mama.
I will.
See you tonight.
Well, what'll it be? The blue plate today is roast beef and mashed potatoes.
That'll be just fine.
Coming right up.
Do you know Pat?
Pat? Oh, Pat! Yeah, sure, sure, we're old friends.
Oh, well, it's nice to know that.
Nice?
Nice to know she has friends. She's always been such a shy girl. Oh, I suppose she didn't tell me about you, because you asked her to go out with you, and she didn't want me to know. She knows how badly I feel about her having no fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what she...
Hey, something wrong?
Just pain. Go away in a moment.
It's too bad. Is there anything I can do?
Oh, no. No, nothing. Operation. Day after tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Pat was telling me. Well, when Doc Finchley gets through with you, you'll be as good as new.
No. Somehow you know about those things. I'm not afraid to die. But Pat, if only she weren't so alone.
Nah, don't you worry about Pat. She's... Well, someday... Someday she'll get married, have a home, kids.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that. Well, maybe if afterwards you ask her to go out with you again, maybe she would then.
Go out with... Oh, well, yeah, sure. Say, look, you better eat your lunch, and then I'll call you a kid.
You're very nice. You're just the sort of young man I'd always hoped.
You don't know what a bum I am. I pinch kids' candy and kick dogs and cats.
Yeah. And help old ladies cross streets.
Oh, it's you. It's kind of late for you to be out?
I brought my mother into the hospital tonight. She's going to be operated on tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I thought I'd like a cup of tea before I go home.
Well, I was closing up, but if you make it quick, I guess it's okay.
Thank you.
How is she?
My mother? Well, she knows, I think.
Knows?
How small her chances are of coming through this.
Oh. Yeah, that's too bad.
She thinks you've asked me to go out with you. I don't know why you said it, but it made her feel...
Oh, she just kind of got that impression herself, I guess, and she was... Well, it seemed to make her feel better, so I didn't say anything.
It was terribly nice of you.
Then now, look, sister, just because I felt sorry for your mother and let her think what she wanted to think, don't start getting any ideas, because I'm...
Ideas? But
I don't like dames. None of them, all of them, every last one of them.
I didn't mean for you to think...
Same old line.
I don't think I want the tea after all. And don't worry... I won't bother you again. Not even for a minute longer to tell you what an impossible, conceited person I think you are. Because you aren't even decent enough to care what I think.
When she arranges for an operation on her mother at the hospital where she works as a nurse, Pat Rogers knows that the case is almost hopeless. And her sole aim is to make her mother's remaining days happy. She finds unexpected help when Nick, the woman-hating owner of the lunchroom across from the hospital, lets Mrs. Rogers think he is fond of Pat, only to be told off by him in no uncertain terms when she tries to thank him. In a hospital corridor the following morning...
Say, Pat...
Nick, what are you doing here?
Well, I guess I sort of sounded off last night and I wanted to tell you that I...
It doesn't matter. Please, they'll be bringing my mother out of her room in a minute.
Well, that was what I really came over here for. I wanted to tell her something, and so I...
Tell her something?
Yeah. You see, I thought maybe she'd feel better if we...
Oh, there she is.
Hey, wait a second.
Please, I haven't got time to talk.
Well, she's all ready, Miss Rogers.
Oh, hi, Nick. What are you doing here?
Doc, I just wanted to tell Mrs. Rogers something. Could we talk to her alone?
Sure.
I'll see if Dr. Finchley's all set.
Pat... So sleepy.
They gave you a sedative, Mama.
Mrs. Rogers.
Why, it's the young man from the little restaurant across the street. Nick, isn't it?
That's right.
Oh, how nice of you to come here.
Well, I just wanted to tell you that... Well, it's this way. You see, Pat and I, well, we're engaged.
We're what?
Yeah, we were just talking, Mrs. Rogers, while we were waiting for you to come out of your room, and we decided we were going to be engaged.
Nick, I don't...
Oh, Pat, such a nice young man. I'm so happy for you.
Well, I may not be much,
but... Oh, you're fine. Just fine. I knew that when I talked to you yesterday. And to think what I've prayed for has happened.
We're all ready for your mother, Miss Rogers.
All right, Doctor. Now, Mama, don't worry about a thing. Everything's going to be all right in just a little while.
Why, of course, Pat. Everything's all right this very minute.
I'll take her upstairs now.
Why did you do it, Nick?
I felt sorry for her yesterday. She's a nice old lady, and I felt sorry for her.
Oh, I see. And if she's all right afterwards, what do you...
Then after a little while, we just tell her we changed our minds. We broke the engagement.
Yes. Yes, of course. Thanks for making her happy. It meant a lot to her. I'm going to her room and wait now.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, all right. We'll make her think we changed our minds.
Sure, that's what we'll have to do. But, Nick, thanks anyway.
Hi, Nick. Coffee and ham on rye.
Sure thing, Doc. Say, how's Mrs. Rogers? I called the hospital twice. They wouldn't tell me much.
I don't know. She rallied a little, then sank again.
But she's still holding on?
Oh, yeah. Fighting every inch of the way.
What do you know?
Of course, if she makes it, it's only a matter of time, you know. 6 months, maybe, at the most.
6 months, huh?
Hey, I just happen to remember. Before she went under the anesthetic, she told Dr. Finchley you and Pat were engaged. So the woman-hater has succumbed, huh?
Not on your life, no, sir. Not me.
I don't get it.
Well, you see, she came in here yesterday for something to eat, and she got to talk in, tell me how worried she was in case something happened to her about her daughter being left all alone. So, just told her we were engaged to make her feel better.
Oh, I see, yeah. And you're the guy who kicks dogs and takes candy from babies.
Ah, cut it out. She's just a nice old lady in trouble, and she kind of reminds me of my own mother.
Yeah, but what if she pulls through?
It's simple. She does. Pat'll just tell her that we broke the engagement. Sure, it's simple. Coffee and ham on rye, coming up.
Mama?
Huh? Oh, Pat. I didn't hear you come into the room.
Did I wake you?
No, no. I just had my eyes closed.
How you feeling, Mama?
Well, I'm feeling quite comfortable, considering.
That's good.
I'm so glad you came in, dear. I was just thinking about you.
You were? What about me?
Well, not just about you, really. About you and Nick. How's Nick?
Oh, he's all right, Mama.
That's good. He's a fine young man, dear. I know he's going to make you very happy.
Yes. Yes, of course he is.
Are you two planning on being married soon? I mean, so I can be at the wedding?
Oh, well, yes. Yes, quite soon, I think. Of course you'll be at the wedding, Mama.
That's good. You know, Pat, that'll make me happier than anything else. Where are you going to have the wedding?
Oh, well, we haven't definitely decided.
Well, how's my pet patient getting along?
Oh, Dr. Finchley, I'm feeling very well.
That's good. Just making my rounds and wanting to put my head in and say hello. I'll be back later.
All right. That's fine.
I think we'd better let your mother get some rest now, Pat. Better come along with me.
Yes. All right, Dr. Finchley.
And Pat, dear, don't you worry about me. If Nick wants you to go out with him tonight, you just go right ahead. I'll be all right.
Yes, Mama. I'll be back soon. How did it go, Dr. Finchley?
Well, Pat, we can certainly call it successful. At least we've given your mother a little while longer to live.
Yes. How long do you think it will be?
Well, it's hard to say. Probably 6 months or so.
I see.
We'll do everything we can. Oh, by the way, Pat, I hear congratulations are in order.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, your engagement to Nick, of course. Your mother told me just before she took the anesthetic.
Oh. Oh, yes.
I like Nick. You two ought to be very happy.
Well, I don't know. It may not work out. We may change our minds.
Say, when a confirmed woman-hater like Nick makes up his mind, it's made up. I'm not worrying about either of you changing your mind. Just don't you forget to invite me to the wedding.
No. No, Dr. Finchley. I won't forget.
Oh, hi there. Just getting ready to close for the night.
How's your mother?
She's going to pull through.
Well, gee, that's swell. I sure am glad.
Dr. Finchley says, though, that, well, she's only going to have a few months. Nick, she was so happy about what you told her that, well, if I told her we were breaking the engagement...
Oh, sure, that's all right. Just let her keep on thinking we really mean it until... Well, you know what I mean.
I'm afraid I wasn't... Well, I didn't act very grateful about what you did for her, but I want you to know...
No, that's all right. Just forget about it.
Forget about it? All right, I'll just forget about it.
Hey, wait a minute, Pat. What's the matter with me? No sale. Yeah, that's the matter with me. Pat.
Nick.
I wanted to talk to you.
Did you, Nick?
Yeah, so, well, I waited till I knew you were off duty. I wanted to, how's your mother?
My mother? Oh, she's gaining steadily.
Well, that's just swell. Wait a minute. I got something for you. Here. We'll open it up.
What? It's a ring. Oh, Nick, you didn't have to do that. Just telling Mama was enough.
Was it? Was it, enough for you, Pat?
Well, you mean...
I mean if... Well, if you could stand a guy like me around, I...
Nick, of course I could. Forever and ever.
There you go crying again.
I know. I'm sorry.
But on you it looks good, honey. On you it looks beautiful.
But, Nick, you told me you didn't like women.
I don't. All except one.
Oh, darling. Now I know I don't have to make believe anymore, do I? Because now I know it's real.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring Debbie Reynolds. Before we hear about next week's show, how about a curtain call for our star?
Of course, Art, and thanks for asking.
Well, thank you, Debbie, for a wonderful performance in the starring role of Grand Gesture today. We'll certainly look forward to your next appearance on Stars Over Hollywood.
So will I. I've enjoyed it, Art. Right now, I'm looking forward to one of those steaming cups on that tray you have there. May I?
Indeed, you may. As you probably remember, it's an after-the-show custom of ours, serving coffee creamed to perfection with Carnation evaporated milk.
I do remember, and I think it's a fine idea.
Here you are. And when you taste it, Debbie, I think you'll discover a touch of smoothness, a fullness of flavor that really sets it apart, that makes it a very special beverage.
You don't have to tell me about Carnation, Art. My mother's been using it at our house for years and years. This is good.
And that's because double rich Carnation is exactly what a good cup of coffee needs. You know, millions of coffee lovers prefer Carnation to cream in their coffee. And yet it actually costs less than half as much as cream. So with that in mind, we invite everyone to enjoy better coffee and save money at the same time. Just cream it with wonderful Carnation evaporated milk. The milk that whips. And now, Debbie, for your outstanding performance today, we'd like you to have this bouquet for your home. Red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of Carnation evaporated milk.
Thanks ever so much, Art. And goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Debbie Reynolds. Next Saturday, Stars Over Hollywood will present Mr. Barry Sullivan in a dramatic play titled The $100 Bill. And now here's Mr. Sullivan.
To me, being out of work and broke was unbelievable. But it happened. And the piece of paper I picked up off the sidewalk that night was just as unbelievable. Did you ever find a $100 bill?
Thank you, Barry Sullivan. We'll all be listening next week to hear you in this exciting play. The story on today's Stars Over Hollywood presentation was written by Elaine McMahon. Supporting Miss Reynolds were Harry Bartell, Myra Marsh, Jack Edwards, and Joe Forte. The program was directed by Don Clark. Ladies, when you shop for groceries today, be sure you buy Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. No other form of milk comes in so handy, so many times, so many ways.
It's Carnation time when it's coffee time. It's Carnation time when you're cooking too. It's Carnation time at baby feeding time. The milk from contented cows for you. All around the clock, it's time for Carnation.
And now for the Carnation Company and Stars Over Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger suggesting that you be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Tune in every Saturday and hear the world's greatest motion picture stars on Stars Over Hollywood. Next Saturday, we are proud to present Barry Sullivan in The $100 Bill. Stars Over Hollywood comes to you transcribed from our Hollywood studios and is heard in Canada over the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. How many lives have you saved lately? You may not realize it, but every time you decide to do anything the safe way instead of a careless way, you may have saved a life. Resolve to act safely at all times.
Stars Over Hollywood, on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 20th of February, 1954, on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.